Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Hollywood Casino Press Box with your host, Frank Cusimano.
Here's the pitch. Right there, there it is! Into left field! Hit number 3,000! A run is scored! Musial ran first! On his way to second with a double!
The best interviews and the most informed insight.
McGaffey breaking free, has a seam, and a crease. The kicker can't trip him up. Headed for the end zone. Will it be back-to-back weeks? Yes!
All tied together with the experience of over 20 years of local broadcasting excellence in St. Louis.
Now Stasny gets away from a check to Fabry. Wide open!
Now, here is Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Morning and welcome. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Boy, do we have a terrific program lined up for you today. John McClain, not Bruce Willis, but the draft guru, the columnist from Texas. He's going to join us. I'll tell you, I was watching some NFL Network stuff today, and Charlie Casserly has moved Drew Lock down to 32, while others have him going to 10.
Well, now, hold on. It's Charlie Casserly. Did Drew Lock subscribe to his pre-draft?
Oh, that determines it?
Well, no. This happened, actually, with Russell Wilson. Not with Russell Wilson. Kyler Murray, rather. He was trashing Kyler during the combine, saying that he was not prepared. He did a terrible job. Something about the worst interviewer he's ever seen.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then it came out that Charlie Casserly, along with his NFL Network duties, is a part of a company that prepares college players for the combine.
Said no to that,
especially more so in the interview process. And Kyler said no to them. So now there's a conflict of interest in terms of Kyler shooting down Charlie Casserly, which I'm sure he asked, and then Charlie Casserly trashing him for his lack of interview ability. So I'm just wondering, did Drew Lock say no to him, and does that affect his standing?
Well, that's interesting, because Casserly is the only guy that has, you know, Lock past like 15 or 16 now.
Let's book him. Let's book Charlie Casserly for Tuna Show.
Yeah. And it's interesting because everybody has Lock way up there. And it became like a huge story on the NFL Network today. Charlie Casserly drops Lock to 32.
And that's also a reason why they manufacture their own drama.
That's right. So John McClain, who's really good, is going to join us at 10:30.
Good Chris, twang.
Yes. Chris Kerber is going to join us, I think, at 11:45. Bob Golby, who went to the Champions Dinner last night, is going to join us at, let's see, he's 11:30 East, our time. No, it's 11:30. That's right. And then Kirk Elmquist, he's the tournament director of the Legends of Golf tournament in Branson. And they're bringing in, for the celebrity part of this, Justin Timberlake and Kid Rock and Mark Wahlberg.
Wow.
And then when the tournament starts, there's Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player. I was a part of that about 3 years ago. And Alex played, and it was one of the coolest things ever. So it's right down the road. It's one of the coolest tournaments. We'll chat about 10:50 with that. Last night, I got the most disturbing four-word text I could possibly get. It comes from Corey Miller, who is my director of player personnel for the fantasy baseball team. And he was watching the Angels game live, and here was the four-word text: Trout hurt, groin strain. Oh, my goodness. I mean, I eventually got to sleep, but I'm thinking, what four-word text could I get that could be more disturbing than Trout hurt, groin strain? Hillary is running again. Kimmel stopped serving lasagna. And then the one I get from Monique quite a bit: I have a headache. But, boy, I cannot afford to lose Mike Trout. We are beating Doug Vaughn as we speak, but, you know, you lose Trout and everything changes. All right, our opening monologue is brought to you by the good people of Gateway Motorsports Park, and let's begin with lap one. The Cardinals, once again, one of the stars of the game. In fact, you could make a case for him being the MVP as a middle reliever. John Brebbia is an engaging guy, and he is also unscored upon this season. Last night, fifth inning, bases loaded, and he did it again.
The 1-2. Got him. Strikeout for Brebbia.
He doesn't make anything bigger than it is, and he's doing a really good job of understanding how to use the stuff, game plan, and doing his homework. And, you know, he's got two pitches, two quality pitches he can throw for strikes. So that's a couple of nice weapons and a great job, obviously, getting the strikeout in the fifth and, you know, getting the sixth as well. So, you know, quality job by him and the rest of the bullpen as well.
Yeah, another good outing by Gant. The offense, well, Yadier Molina starting to pick it up, folks.
Molina hits it out to deep left field. That ball is down. One hops off the wall. One run in. The 2-1 pitch. And Molina, base hit. Down into the corner. One run is in. Here comes another. Relay to the plate. Is not in time. Safe at the plate.
Two hits, three RBIs. The batting average now over the Mendoza line. And then there's Paul Goldschmidt. And forget his batting average, which is right now just 195. The man has six homers and 10 RBIs.
Goldschmidt with a drive. Out to deep left. At the wall. Gone. Paul Goldschmidt, number six.
But unfortunately, what most people are talking about today is the play in left field. Let's take a listen to Marcell Ozuna, not exactly Barry Bonds in left.
Swing and a high fly ball left field. Ozuna back. He's at the wall, and he didn't need to climb the wall. The ball hit the warning track and bounced over the wall for a double.
Well, not only did he make a fool of himself, he's hurt.
Ooh.
He went back, he climbed up the wall, getting ready to jump and save it, and the ball was 15 feet from the wall.
That's about as candid as I've heard Mike Shannon in a while. And, you know, he wasn't hurt. He was embarrassed.
He bruised his ego. Yeah. Not so much his body.
And he just laid on the ground. And I guess that's what you got to do at that point, because the ball's, you know, it's in the bullpen. It doesn't matter. But, I saw Lonnie Smith, and, boy, Reggie Sanders had a couple of moments. I've never seen anything like it.
Matt Holliday had some moments sometimes
yeah.
in left. Never
God,
like that.
It's a Cardinal left field thing. That's what it is. Gosh, poor guy. I was about to send a tweet. No, I don't want to be mean. That's just brutal. And the thing about it is, before the game, Brian, we were in a scrum. And it was Mark Saxon that asked him, are you going to make people pay eventually for running on you? He goes, yeah, I'm going to make them pay.
We didn't say when.
Yeah. Wow. That's just brutal. And, you know, I tell you, this Mike Shildt after the game, the way he handled it, just very mature about it. And, hey, I appreciate the effort. So that's what you tell your wife when she has a really bad meal that she really tried hard on. Hey, I really appreciate the effort. All right, lap two. So, if you had to pick a position in Cardinal baseball where you chose, where did they have the best players? What single position had the Cardinals had their best players? Now, center field kind of jumps out in one way because you had Terry Moore, Curt Flood, Willie McGee, Jim Edmonds, and Ray Lankford. Lankford played a lot in center. First base is pretty good, too. If you count like Stan and Albert at that position, it's over. Then you throw in Cepeda, MVP, Bill White, Keith Hernandez, MVP, Jack Clark, and Mark McGuire. Shortstop, you had Ozzie and Marty Marion. Third base is pretty good, Roland and Boyer. Left field, now, it depends what you do with Stan and with, I mean, you'd have Lou out there, so that would be really good, too. And then Matt Holliday was a great player, just not a great defensive player. But the catching spot is fascinating. Yadier and Ted. So I asked the commish a two-parter yesterday. Who would he like to have for the best 10 years of their career? And if he could put only one of these guys in the Hall of Fame, who would he put in? Here's the commish.
The answer one is Molina. Because even Ted Simmons would tell you that. Molina's the best catcher we've ever seen here. And for 10 years, I think you want that defense over that offense. I'm just going to go that route and make it that simple. So your second question is, I think Ted Simmons is more of a Hall of Fame candidate now than Yadier Molina is. First, Yadier's still playing, but Ted is one of the top hitters in the game, top switch hitters ever. And the Hall of Fame seems to list toward that right now. Plus, he's running out of time. He can't be on this ballot too many more years and still have a chance to get in. This is going to be his absolute best chance this year coming up, I think.
And I love Yadi, and I know of his greatness. But I got to tell you, in Ted's best 10 years, his lowest RBI total was 77. Yadi has exceeded that total twice in his career. And then Simba's career WAR is 50. Yadi's is 38. I love them both. But I'll take that lethal hitting catcher and his best 10 years over Yadi's best 10 years. That's probably not popular because more people have seen Yadi than Ted. And it's just, you know, it's tough to state a case against Yadi or Molina because he's so great and because of what he does with the pitching staff. But I'm prejudiced to Ted, I think. All right, lap three. It opens tonight, Blues and Canucks. This means nothing, but I thought it was kind of interesting. The Athletic, which is a very respected publication, put together a panel of hockey experts, and they asked this question. Come up with a dark horse team to win the cup, and the Blues won it. Why not? Why not pick them? Hottest team, hottest goaltender, best scoring defensive unit?
Dan Rosen, who writes for NHL.com, has the Blues. Now, I disagree with this if they match up. Losing to Tampa in the Stanley Cup Finals, which, I mean, the Blues played remarkably well against Tampa during the season.
Yeah.
Why not just have them win it if you're going to take them, pick them to go that far?
I'll tell you, it's just the buzz around town. I was just at the gas station, and the guy gave me a list of how the Blues will win each series and by how many games. It's so exciting. Of course, by 9:30 tonight, they could be down 1-0 in that crazy Winnipeg atmosphere. Let's hear from the team MVP, Ryan O'Reilly, on the series.
It's going to be a tough test. It's a very good team over there, but you know what? You know, we're a good team, too. It's going to be a heck of a series, and you know, I'm confident in our group. You know, we've got a lot of good pieces, and we show up and do things the right way, we'll give ourselves a good chance.
All right, lap four. I know very little about prison, have had some friends go there and ask some questions to them from time to time, like my friend Luther Burden, the star from St. Louis University, who's doing great, working at Schnucks, raising a superstar basketball player and football player at Cardinal Ritter, Luther Burden Jr. Luther said when he went to Marion, they all knew he was coming. I mean, he said like everybody knew who he was when he walked in. And they wanted to watch him play ball. And they bring in teams, outside teams, to play against the prison team. And they would pack the place. And Luther said he would put on a show for everybody. And everybody liked him, and it wasn't a problem. I don't know if it was all the time is perfect, but it wasn't a problem for him. You know where much of the tempers erupt in prison and the fights start to happen? Around the phone. If an inmate goes over allotted time, it could erupt. We've had Denny McClain on the radio about four times. He's the last man to win 30 games. Won 31 games in 1968 for the Detroit Tigers, who lost to the Cardinals in the World Series. No, beat the Cardinals in the World Series. And Mickey Lolich actually was the star of that one. But anyway, McClain wrote a book, one of the most fascinating books ever. The guy screwed up a lot. But he had to pummel a guy, which was phone call related. I'm telling you, you go over that a lot of time, you're going to pay a price. Then yesterday we had Bo Mitchell on, former two sports star from the University of Colorado, who went to prison on some frivolous charges. And he's a normal guy, husband, father, businessman, who was put in a federal prison. And here's the question he asked on day one to one of the prison officials.
The sweet lady Cindy, when I was being, they call A and O, admission and orientation, she said, "Do you have any questions?" And I said, "When do I get raped and when do I get beat up?" And she took her reading glasses off and said, "You're serious, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes, that's about the most serious question I've ever asked." And she gave me great instruction. She just said, "Keep your mouth shut. If you see it, you don't really see it. If you hear it, you didn't hear it. Mind your own business." She said, "You won't feel like yourself except maybe 5 minutes a day." And her instruction helped me. But frankly, I hadn't thought about this. But the first couple weeks, the first week I was there, there were four times I was confronted with what could have ended up in a physical fight. And yes, each time I just had the words from God or something to defuse it and step away. But after that first few weeks, you really do get an understanding. And if you slug somebody in prison, they're not going to ask whose fault it was. You're just going to go deeper in the system. They're probably going to tack another year or two on your sentence. And it's best in prison just to toe the line, follow the rules, and cooperate.
He wrote a great book called Grace Behind Bars. And a couple of those instances he talked about, it was phone call related.
There is something funny about him calling that admissions and orientation, as if it's first day of college.
Yeah. Number two pencils. All right, lap five. So Magic Johnson is out in L.A. God bless, one of the best of all time. This is what he said at his weird press conference yesterday.
And then also I've been thinking about the great meetings I had with Jeannie the last couple of days. And, you know, I love her as a sister. And so today I'm going to step down as president. I had more fun on the other side than on this side because now... tomorrow, I would have to affect somebody's life, ruining their life. And I thought about that. I said, that's not fun for me. That's not who I am. And then I don't want to put her in the middle of us. You know, even though she said, hey, you do what you want to do, I know she has great love for him and great love for me, you know. And so I want to go back having fun. I want to go back being who I was before taking on this job.
Wow. Why would you go through the stress of trying to turn around a franchise that has no hope right now? There's no light at the end of the tunnel. None of the K's are coming to L.A. Kyrie, Kevin, Kawhi, Clay. Jimmy Butler won't make you a champion, may not even make you a playoff team. And one of these days, LeBron is going to get really, really old. Magic tried. And maybe if the Anthony Davis deal would have happened, he'd still be running the Lakers this morning. He wants to be a big brother, not a president of basketball operations. There's no nicer superstar. There really isn't. But here's the thing. To be really good at that job, you got to get on a plane to Croatia, go watch some 17-year-old 7-foot-1 kid. You got to be at McDonald's High School All-American Games. You got to be on the phone with coaches. This is a 59-year-old man. He doesn't want to do this. Brian, just for the heck of it, check his net worth. And, you know, the amazing thing is he didn't tell Jeannie Buss in person. She had to find out through a press conference. But
he loves her like a sister.
Yeah.
But he's not going to tell her first. Google suggests he's worth an estimated $600 million, which to me means more than his age, because he just probably thought, I'm worth this much. Why would I do anything I don't like?
Absolutely.
I want to have fun.
Yeah. And I don't blame him at all. Oh. It was just handled so awkwardly. I will say this, is my theory has always been you can only be good at one thing in life. He disproved that. He's good at two things. Great businessman, great basketball player. But then the other one, the executive and the coaching. You know, it's interesting because all of his jobs, like the talk show, which was a big bomb, he just woke up one day and said, you know, I'm not going to do this anymore. And then, like, the coaching. Remember when he coached the Lakers for a cup of coffee? I just woke up, and I'm not going to do it anymore. And now this one, just woke up, I'm not going to do this anymore. But there's, he's just a great guy. I had two long sit-down interviews with him. One at Roger Hardin's basketball camp in Kentucky, and the other at the Marriott in downtown St. Louis. I think Demetrius helped set it up for me. And I was babysitting Brooke at the time, and I had to take her with me. And, boy, Magic just kind of picked her up. Hey, Brooke! And we got a picture. And every time Magic Johnson's on TV, I'll get a text from Brooke. Hey, that's our guy. It's impossible not to like this guy. But you also got to realize that he just wasn't very good at it. I mean, you could say, well, he got LeBron, but it didn't work out. And I don't think he was the hardest worker at this job, but I don't blame him. When you're worth that kind of money, why would you want to do anything strenuous? So, all right, lap six. Stream of consciousness. It's not just me who loves food. Called Bob Golby last night to book him. Just got back to his hotel room in Augusta after the champions dinner where they have all the previous champions in one dining room in Augusta. And I said, Bob, how was it? He goes, oh, it was great. We had this bone-in ribeye, cream corn, great Caesar salad, talking about the dessert. Just, God, I love Bob Golby. Went to Duke's Food Picks. Went to Duke's Barbecue for Food Picks in Wentzville. It is right up there with any great barbecue place we have in St. Louis. Burnt Ends Rangoon. This barbecue inside the Crab Rangoon. It was unbelievable. The brisket, the ribs, the pulled pork, absolutely outstanding. Billiken Banquet last night, really cool. Ballpark Hilton, Bob and Earl were the MCs celebrating an Atlantic 10 title. Well, you could tell that they just won 23 games and went to the NCAA tournament by the size of that crowd. It was really, really big. Finally, my good friend Mike Claiborne often makes fun of me, and I think Brian does too, about how I'm always late to the game in terms of shows. Evident of, like, I'm season four of The Sopranos now, Breaking Bad, all these shows that people have watched. I'm like 3 to 10 years late. And I said to this Monique, I said that to Monique last night, that everybody pokes fun at me about it. And she says, do you realize that for 20 years, we did not watch TV? We didn't. I mean, maybe we'll watch Everybody Loves Raymond or Seinfeld or something like that, but we never watched TV because we had three kids, and every night we were at a practice or a game or I was working. I didn't watch television for 20 freaking years.
To be fair, DVR has made it easier.
Yes.
And being able to binge watch TV shows has simplified the process a lot.
That's a great point.
Can I offer something up? Because yeah. Adam Long is playing in the Masters, right, this year?
Yes.
Let's just say he strikes gold and he wins. Can we get a Frank's Food Picks at the Augusta dinner next year for Adam Long's Masters dinner?
I like that idea.
Can we get that?
Man, that would really be good.
That would be the crown jewel of Frank's Food Picks.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And I've never been to Augusta, so that would be living out a dream, too. I like that idea. All right, let's take a short time out. We're going to talk about Drew Locke and the NFL draft with John McClain when we come back.